Ranch, 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Two U.S. Navy pilots were shot down over the Red Sea Saturday in an apparent friendly fire incident. ABC's Chuck Sievertson has details.
Friendly fire means shot down mistakenly by your own military. In cases involving the U.S., it's a rarity. The military central command says the guided missile cruiser USS Gettysburg mistakenly fired on and hit an American F-A-18 warplane. Both pilots ejected safely. One has minor injuries, says the military statement.
Today's expected to be one of the busiest travel days of the year. There are already nearly 700 delayed flights into and out of U.S. airports. Also, one of the final days for pre-Christmas shopping. Five people were injured Saturday when a man who was leading police on a high-speed chase drove his pickup truck through a JCPenney in Killeen, Texas. Driver was shot and killed by an officer. And baseball legend Ricky Henderson, sports all-time stolen base and runs leader, has died at 65. This is ABC News. A funeral service was held Saturday for 14-year-old Ruby Vergara. She was shot and killed in the shooting at Abundant Life Christian School in Madison, Wisconsin. The service was live-streamed from Madison City Church, where Vergara's uncle, Andy Remus, urged the community not to blame itself for the shooting.
Hear me. Do not for one minute blame yourselves for anything that has happened here. My family releases you from any feelings of guilt, and we encourage you to continue your faithful teaching of Christian values in God's everlasting word.
Teacher Aaron West was also killed in the shooting carried out by a 15-year-old who died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The FAA and the National Park Service have approved a plan to prohibit commercial air tours over the Canyon de Chelly National Monument in northeast Arizona. Park superintendent says this protects these lands' cultural and spiritual significance to Navajo Nation. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Do you hear that? Asthma triggers are everywhere, from dust mites, pet dander, and pollen, to smog and smoke. An asthma attack can strike anywhere, anytime. Be prepared with quick-acting Primatene Mist. Clinically proven to open airways quickly. It's the number one FDA-approved asthma inhaler available over-the-counter. Primatene Mist. Breathe easy again. Use as directed.
Progressive presents Employee of the Month. Small Business Edition. Today's recipient from Lucky Larry's Landscaping, Larry! Larry saved his business money with a quick commercial auto quote from Progressive. Does it help he's his own marketing manager, accountant, executive assistant, and never been late? Technically, yes, but saving really put him over the edge. So, Larry, give Larry a round of applause. Be your own, Larry. See if you could save in as little as 7 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Have you ever heard of a marten? Not Martin the person, but Martin the animal. It's Wisconsin's only state endangered mammal. And now there are new efforts to protect its population. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
The Federal Department of the Interior has awarded the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission more than $800,000 for recovery efforts for American martens. Jonathan Pauly is a professor of forest and wildlife ecology at UW-Madison. He says silvicultural practices and logging within local national forests altered martens' preferred habitats.
This work is really trying to understand how do we manage habitat in a meaningful way on these working landscapes to increase marten habitat and connectivity of these different subpopulations to ensure martens are here for the foreseeable future.
Pauly says the grant money will bring together a diverse group of folks from the federal, state, tribal, and academic levels over 4 years. They'll create a forest management proposal with recommended habitat improvements for marten recovery in Wisconsin. Pauly says martens play important cultural, economic, and ecological roles, including the ability, as predators, to keep rodent populations at bay and are culturally significant to the Ojibwe or Chippewa people.
They actually live and hunt underneath that snowpack. that they can slink in and out from underneath the snow, where they can hunt all the mice that are living underneath the snow and then pop up out of the snowbank. And they have big feet, like snowshoe hares almost, where they can surf on top of the snow.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly cloudy skies today. Gusty south winds with highs in the middle 20s. Overnight, a chance of snow developing. Clouds and breezy south winds will diminish as lows drop to the lower 20s. And snow will continue into the first half of Monday. It's 15 at our studios.
Pat Kreitlow.
Monday morning, a simple way to reduce the burden on property taxpayers. Have the legislature go back to paying its fair share for special education.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade, which means distant thunder. Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Chuzhunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Well, I like to bring that up and do the intro the same way to hear you just say I was right. So I'm right once a day, and that's good to know. We have a really, you know, I always say this, but we have a really exciting show today. And our friend Leah Lim, that I have not seen and we look up to here, and you're a real pro. So we have to really be on our good behavior here, Leah, but I just want to give you a quick intro here and then get right to it. Leah Lim is a senior editor with the Minnesota Public Radio, leading the Native News Initiative. And you are a radio host, producer, songwriter, singer, citizen of a Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, and your work revolves around sound, music, voice, community story sharing, with the mission to amplify Native voices. And that was a mouthful, but I know you do more than that. Welcome to Native Roots Radio.
Thank you, Robert.
Yes. Hey, we're here to talk about your documentary, but I just also just want to just start out by saying you do so much great work for the community, amplifying our voices, and you've been doing it for a long time. And I remember years ago I was on your brother's, show, and we had such a great time. I'm sure you edit out a few things I said, but I appreciate that because we lost our minds, I think.
Sometimes that's necessary, but yeah, thank you so much, Robert. I think I have such a joy, you know, in doing this work, and I also look up to you.
Oh, that's probably because I'm just a few inches taller than you, but I appreciate
that. How appreciate... I always forget that until I see you out in the real world.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, you know, I just want to know, how did you first get in? We're going to talk about your documentary, but I want to talk about first, how did you first get into storytelling and writing for NPR and Native News?
Well, this is my favorite long and winding story, because nothing is ever a straight line, right? I grew up always loving music, not liking public speaking, however. But mostly music, singing, playing instruments. I play the violin, I play the piano, and I started making songs, you know, as a young kid, and writing little poems. So kind of over the course of college and things like that, I really explored more when it came to songwriting, singing, and recording of those things. So I became enamored with recording voice, whether that was through singing or speaking, so more of the oral tradition direction. And so I actually am a Boomerang employee at NPR APM. And I was first there for several years doing work behind the scenes in broadcast operations. And so I was doing the technical side of things, which is so fun, and spent a lot of time listening, right? So a lot of this work, as much as we love talking, and I can go on here, but as much as I love talking, most of the work is listening. And so I spent a lot of time listening to the airwaves, whether it was NPR, whether it was other, you know, news outlets around the world, Canada, and I noticed kind of a lack of Native voices. And so it kind of spurred something in me to try to remedy that at least a little bit. And so I kind of set out on my own and did a bunch of freelance work, studied more about creative writing, did my MFA, and just really dived into Native storytelling, journalism, oral tradition, and just conversation, really, with that hope to amplify Native voices and just to be able to hear our voices on the airwaves more and more.
Well, and I agree. I love radio too, because it's the theater of the mind. And that was an old quote from the old radio I listened to years and years ago on WCCO at night when they would do the plays. That's how old I am. But we're talking today about your experience producing your documentary, also Finding Manoomin, A Search for the Spirit of Wild Rice. And, you know, first of all, what a beautiful story. And also, your voice is just awesome in narrating and talking about your story. I really appreciated that. How did this come into fruition?
Yeah, it's kind of fun. So this kind of is the part of the story where I become that Boomerang employee back to NPR News. Is I was having conversations with folks at NPR about exploring water, like the significance of water and how to get into the conversation about water. And what came to mind was wild rice and my own, for lack of a better word, I guess, failure in knowing a lot about it. I knew I liked to eat wild rice. I knew I liked to cook. And yeah, that was about it. That's the end of the list right there. But I knew there was so much history and so much meaning and things like that behind Manoomin, our Manoomin relative. And so I thought, what a nice way to explore the ideas of how we are, you know, as Ojibwe people and a lot of times Native people, interacting with our environment and having a different form of relationship with, you know, what we consider relatives, you know, as far as plants and animals and water. And so I started working on this project through NPR News. I started on it before I was hired back. It was only a few weeks there in between, and then transitioned full time into my role as senior editor with Native News at NPR News. And so this was another project I got to work on in parallel with my work as an editor. And so really, it started out, like I said, as this exploration of what is Manoomin? What does it mean to my community, you know, with the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe? And kind of discovered more opportunity for exploration, I guess, in that, because what I thought was going to be a simple, like, hey, let's look at migration. Let's look at, you know, what does the name, what does Manuman mean with the Goodberry? You know, where do we go? What's the process of, you know, the sticks and the poles and the canoes? It led me to a conversation with my own family, like talking with my dad, Bill Primo, about our own history with interacting and being a part of cultural traditions like ricing, which we weren't growing up. And so we had that conversation in the documentary as well.
Well, you know, you also, it's a family affair too. I was going to bring that up, and your son's involved too. And I can't wait to grill you more here in the next segment here, because
I look forward to it.
Right on. Hey, we're here with Leah Lim, and we're talking about finding Manoman, a search for the spirit of wild rice. And what a great title. And I'm excited to get on that next, right after this commercial break. I know NPR doesn't have commercials per se, but we have to pay the bills here. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Cindy from Appleton.
Time Magazine has made the convicted felon the man of the year this year. Shame on them.
Time Magazine base their person of the year on impact and, like, newsmaking. The CEO assassination is pretty much the only news cycle that isn't entirely focused on Donald Trump, and yet it still relates to him because he has no healthcare policy.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACD, in Minneapolis.
Hey, we are here with Leah Lim, and we are talking about her documentary, Finding Manoman, A Search for the Spirit of Wild Rice. And before we get too far into this, let our listening audience know where we can find this.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff you can check out when it comes to the documentary, and it can all be found on nprnews.org/wildrice.
I like how you did the visual slice.
It's a personal reminder to myself, you know, whoop, there's a slash there. And what's fun, also on the website, besides the full documentary, which is about almost a half an hour long, is a letter to the audience. And I also spent, in the documentary, you'll see me cooking, you'll see me interacting with my kid, things like that. I've included a quick and easy recipe for Ojibwe fried rice, which involves thick cut bacon. So obviously it's delicious. And since I'm a radio person as well, I also did an hour-long audio companion, which you can also check out on nprnews.org/wildrice.
Absolutely. I'm going to go back and listen to that. Hey, I don't know if you know this, Liam, but my son-in-law is Ojibwe. So as you know, we're Ho-Chunk and the people of the Sacred Voice, but my son-in-law is Ojibwe, and I really I like him. So I want to hear, can you tell our listeners a little bit about the migration story of the Ojibwe people? Like how I brought that around.
Yeah. And you know, what's fun is my kid is in sixth grade. So he actually had a unit on the Ojibwe migration, and he told me about it earlier this year. So that was kind of fun. But, you know, we originate kind of in more of the Northeast Canada area. And there was a prophecy or a dream that says, you know, you need to start moving west. And at some point you will come across food that grows on water. And this will be your indication that this is where you should live. And so there are several different spots along the way. I think 6 or 7 different locations where Ojibwe folks settled according to that prophecy. And so one of them, and for our people, for the Mille Lacs band, we went to Mille Lacs. So that's kind of how people came and moved west. And what I love is I visit in the documentary, the Mille Lacs Indian Trading Post, Mille Lacs Indian Museum and Trading Post, and speak with Travis Zimmerman. And he gives a good overview, and there's a lot of good information there as well.
I think it's a beautiful story, you know, and where food floats on water and you found wild rice. And I just think that's beautiful. You know, can you tell our people listening about the significance of wild rice and what that means to Ojibwe people?
Well, and that's kind of what this documentary explores, right? Because, you know, I can only assume so much. And, you know, maybe I'll tell you a little bit of a story that didn't come across in the documentary, but I did talk about in the audio companion, is not long after I went out racing with the crew, Pat Cruz and his family, my uncle passed away. And, you know, we all got together at the community center and we're, you know, getting our, you know, the food ready and, you know, ceremony. And Michaela, who's also in the documentary, nudged me. She's like, Leah, the rice dish here was harvested by Pat Cruz. So the person that I went out racing with was the person that provided a lot of the wild rice for the ceremony. And so I found it to be this lovely, like, connecting through line among community, among ceremony, that I knew in ceremony there with this food, that this food was gathered by somebody local, somebody who put thought and care into the process of ricing. And so when I think about what it means to community, what I discovered is that it brings people together. It brings family together, it brings community together, and shares the love that went into the process of harvesting and preparing wild rice and cooking wild rice. So it really is this like glue, this adhesion that helps bring people together.
Yeah, that's really interesting too. And I know you're an artist too, a beader, and there's a prayer within every bead. And we talk a lot here about asking people who made, if you're going to buy something like that, who made this? Because there is so much community, like you say, with wild rice and involved in our art too.
Yeah, it's this energy, this sharing of energy, positive energy in it.
Yeah, wow. What else would you like to talk about? I just, you know, I told you in the chat I'm nervous because you're a pro, and I'm here 8 years on the radio. I'm still stumbling around, but I really appreciate you coming on. What else would you like?
Yeah. Well, you know me, just make the mic hot and I'll just take it from there. No. But I do want to share that one of the most significant learning moments for me in the documentary is how open and willing people are to share those traditional ways with others, with people who want to learn. Because, you know, as a newbie, when it comes to wild rice, like, I'm not going to be good at it. Who would be good at it? You know, I try to learn Ojibwe Moen as I can. I try to learn other, you know, artsy things that I try and fail at, right? That I want to stress the lesson of opening oneself up to learning and understanding that it is okay to not know something and to ask for help. And so in that process, I realized how willing community members were to help you learn. And so not to be ashamed, you know, of not knowing something, when the goal is to keep these cultural practices alive. Mm-hmm. So if that's the goal, we don't need to be ashamed of it, of not knowing something. Because, you know, if we work together, we can, you know, keep it alive. And, you know, I'm 40 something years old and never went ricing before. And, you know, in my age, I got out there and wasn't too bad at it. So I can always get out there again.
Well, and that's something you learned on your trip through this, because you said you do you have a right to do this as a 30 something year old person in the documentary?
30 40 something. Yes. Thanks.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's a good way to put it too. There's people out there. I know, it's funny, I have a great friend, Barry Hand, that when I try and speak Ho-Chunk to him, because he knows some Ho-Chunk, he says, just keep doing it. It's not right or wrong. And that's the same vein of that. I just want to touch, too, a little bit. You played some music into this documentary?
I did. Yes. So a part of this was I was inspired by what I saw, by the mm-hmm. people that I interacted with, and seeing kind of a family come together on the water, that I wrote a song and as kind of a gift back to the participants. So I sang and wrote it, and my brother, Mr. Cole Primo, played guitar.
Right on. Wow. I just, we have to do this again, and we have to have a whole show with you, because this is, time's flying by really fast. I'm with Leah Lim, and she's a radio host, songwriter, citizen of Mille Lacs, Band of Ojibwe, and we're talking about her documentary. If we can, my producer here, who's this show would not happen without my Chujunk, we have 1 minute left, as you see. That's where can we find this great documentary, Haley?
That's a great question. You can go to nprnews.org/wildrice, and you can find the 30-minute documentary as well as Leah's song and the 60-minute audio documentary that goes along with it.
I just want to say, Leah, we got to get you on again. I really, really appreciate what you do for the community, and knowledge is power, and thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, Chimiguich, thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you real soon. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. Up next, we have, who do we have?
Representative. We're going to have Minnesota State Rep Jessica Hansen's going to be back joining us.
Exactly. You passed the test. Hey, we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Two U.S. Navy pilots were shot down over the Red Sea Saturday in an apparent friendly fire incident. ABC's Chuck Sievertson has details.
Friendly fire means shot down mistakenly by your own military. In cases involving the U.S., it's a rarity. The military central command says the guided missile cruiser USS Gettysburg mistakenly fired on and hit an American F-A-18 warplane. Both pilots ejected safely. One has minor injuries, says the military statement.
Today's expected to be one of the busiest travel days of the year. There are already nearly 700 delayed flights into and out of U.S. airports. Also one of the final days for pre-Christmas shopping. Five people were injured Saturday when a man who was leading police on a high-speed chase drove his pickup truck through a JCPenney in Killeen, Texas. Driver was shot and killed by an officer. And baseball legend Ricky Henderson, sports all-time stolen base and runs leader, has died at 65. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks beat the Wizards. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It was the Bucks over the Wizards, 112-101. Giannis and Damian Lillard both sat out, so Bobby Portis stepped up, scoring 34 points, his highest of the season.
It's going to be nice where, you know, your best players sit out and get rest days, and then there's nights where the other guys have opportunity to step up and show what they can do, so it was a big win for us tonight.
The Bucks are in Chicago tomorrow night against the Bulls. NFL, the Packers holding practice indoors, getting ready for Monday Night Football. They host the Saints. We'll start rookie quarterback Spencer Rattler, a fifth-round pick out of Oklahoma. Now, just because New Orleans has slipped to 5-9 doesn't mean they will be easy to beat.
This is the National Football League. You better get yourself ready to go, otherwise you're going to get your ass kicked. I don't care who you're playing. I mean, look at the game last week. I mean, they had a chance to win the game on the last play of the game. So, to me, every week's the same.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly cloudy skies today, gusty south winds with highs in the middle 20s. Overnight, a chance of snow developing. Clouds and breezy south winds will diminish as lows drop to the lower 20s, and snow will continue into the first half of Monday. It's 15 at our studios.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. New York City Mayor Eric Adams was denied access to over $4 million in matching public funding for his 2025 campaign due to questions over an ongoing federal investigation and accusations of financial mismanagement. The U.S. Department of Justice filed charges against the mayor in September, charging him with taking campaign donations from foreign nationals and businessmen, allegedly using straw donors to make them appear as legitimate donations. He is also accused of doing favors in exchange for luxury travel and attempting to conceal these transactions, according to the DOJ. The New York City Campaign Finance Board ruled December 16th that Mayor Adams' request for $4.5 million in matching funds would be denied. The chair of the board said in a statement, "After thoroughly reviewing all available information, including the details of the indictment of Mayor Adams, the board has determined there is reason to believe the Adams campaign has engaged in conduct detrimental to the matching funds program in violation of law, including the Campaign Finance Act and board rules." New York City's campaign finance system provides an 8-to-1 match for small donations of $250 or less for mayor and $175 for city council. Such small donor financing systems promote transparency, discourage big money, and encourage less affluent candidates to run. We have links to more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Alba Show.
UW Systems spends $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants. Three times the budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Ask people at Richland Center, Waukesha, Washington County, if they got their $51 million worth for the UW system.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Dom Selvia.
Next time, our favorite Delano Democrat, Harvey K., will join us. Plus, does MAGA have their pitchforks and torches out for their own speaker, Mike Johnson? Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Yes, they do. Hey, that was a great conversation. We have to have Leah Lim back on and, you know, talk about her journey. I think her journey is a story in itself, too, which is part of the documentary with her family and talking about ricing and going through the whole process. But wow, that was really, really good to hear from her, and what positive energy I could feel all the way through the airwaves.
Yeah, even though I think she's probably, I know she lives in Grand Rapids, so it's quite a distance, but hopefully she's staying warm up there. It was so great to have Leah on with us today. And yeah, what a great documentary. And I think her story can really resonate with a lot of people. I think no matter, you know, what family you come from or if you've grown up in the Native community, there's always something to learn and to be passed on. And even if it's something you haven't tried before, I think you should be willing to do that. And I know in the documentary, she was really open about, you know, just like the fear and feeling like she didn't have a right to learn the wild rice craft. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. And, you know, even doing that, like I think about, you know, how I'm scared to go dancing or learn to dance a certain way or learn a new craft or something. And, you know, you never know what it's going to feel like until you do it. And because these things are so important to pass on, it's worth the risk, and it's definitely worth putting yourself out there. And you could be good at it, so it's important.
I think I have like 3 jingle dresses I've bought, Ho-Chunk with Ho-Chunk.
Oh, you wear them?
No, but it made me think of maybe next year as a New Year's resolution.
Yeah, make some new things.
No, have you danced the jingle?
Oh, you want me jingle dress?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, I get where you're going with that.
like, oh, make another dress, huh? No.
Well, that's like a thing, because when I started to learn how to make ribbon skirts.
Mm-hmm. With pockets.
Thank you for mentioning. Leah said this quote in her documentary, and she said that even though it was her first time doing this activity, wild ricing, that she felt like it was familiar to her. And she quoted, it was almost like a deja vu moment when she was out there in the canoe, kind of like you're experiencing it again, but through your ancestors. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important, because like, even if it's something you haven't done before in this lifetime, it's in your blood, and it's, you know, it's in your family genes to do those things. And that's why it's important DNA. To learn it and pass it on.
Yeah. I know one of my daughters, when she first heard the drum, got emotional.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's a journey back to yourself.
Yeah.
And back to your ancestors in a sense too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's a story everyone can relate to, too, you know.
Yeah.
And to be around good medicine, I think that's really part of the story I got out of this, too, is that there are people like my friend Barry and people out there that are real open to it and not maybe gatekeepers as some may be. And then you just don't deal with them. You just go move on to different people. But it's hard because you know, there's some self-esteem that comes with knowing, but there can't be gatekeepers, and there are people that'll open up with the knowledge and in a good way. And that's what you want anyways, is to deal with somebody with good medicine.
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of really great leaders in our community, that are willing to teach and willing to pass down these, you know, collective knowledges so that we can continue our culture. And I think they kind of touched on this in the documentary too, but learning your culture and reconnecting, who was this? I think she was with someone on the Mille Lacs Reservation, but they were talking about how wild ricing and reconnecting to their Anishinaabe spirit has kept them clean and kept them away from addiction and drugs and alcohol. And it's kind of like you're no longer needing an escape from the life that you have when you start searching the life that you should have or that you were given by like finding your culture.
Yeah, that was a heavy duty part. I'm glad you brought that back up. And is that, you know, part of recovering from your addiction is to find out who you are. And Yeah. If that's the big piece that's missing, that's really important. Hey, I see somebody in the bullpen right there.
Hey, I think it's our friend, Representative Jessica Hansen.
Hey, welcome. How are you, Representative?
Hello, everybody. How are you, Robert and Haley? Nice to see you.
Doing great. Doing great. Congratulations on your reelection. I know you were out. I'm Facebook friends with you, so I see all your work and also all the work that you've done for other candidates, too, because it was really important to knock on doors for them, too.
Yeah, it was a really exciting campaign trail this year. You know, we talked to tens of thousands of people around the state and really made sure that our politics was about the people and having the conversations and showing up in the spaces where we maybe haven't been able to be as much. So I was up in Bemidji helping Reed Olson, making sure that he could continue to get his name out there, make sure that people could see what a great, fantastic representative he would make at some point. And we're going to keep fighting if he's in the game. But anybody who's interested in running for office, I think it's so important that we show up and support them. For those of us who have made it in, and make sure we hold the door open for folks coming behind us and all the youth around too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've been doing this for like 8 years, and a lot of the stories I hear for people running for office is they don't always win the first time, and they come back and run again and have the experience, and they do end up winning again. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah, there's a number of folks in the legislature right now who ran 3 or 4 times before they won, and some who, you know, won and then lost and then came back and won again. And so, and we see that, and that's the will of the people, and making sure that representatives are in their communities talking to people, and that people know who is making decisions for them in St. Paul, makes all the difference. And the people spoke, and we'll keep getting out there and keep talking to more people.
Well, you know, your job is part-time, but I don't believe that for 1 minute, because you're always working, whether it's campaigning every couple of years. But now we are inching towards a new session. What do we got going on here with this really close voting proximities with the Senate and the House?
Yeah. So we in the House have a tie. This has not happened since 1978. And so what that means is that there's 67 Republicans and 67 Democrats, and we will have to figure out how to pass bills that have a majority vote. And, you know, bills can pass with a, you know, one extra vote, and one person can go either way. And we see that in the Senate right now with that one vote majority that they've got. But in the House, you know, we can have one vote that goes either way, but that will create some pretty contentious circumstances. So I'm really looking forward to us working on things that we know are going to protect Minnesotans that have already won on a lot of issues: paid family medical leave, earned sick and save time. So many of the great workers' rights protections we've put in place, democracy protections, protections for our LGBTQ communities, protections for Native communities, including the office, the MMIR office, and so many other resources that we cannot forget about or go backward on. And so really, it's got to be about looking forward for the people. If politics is how we care about each other, then we need to make sure we're looking forward to those future generations and figuring out what kind of a world do we want to live. And there's no point in going back. So continuing to look forward is what I'm looking forward to.
Well, and I you're a positive person, and you go across the table and talk to the Republicans, and that's a really good thing, especially with the tie vote. You can talk to these people, and you know who's reasonable and maybe who's not.
And I, one of the big bills that I worked on, one of my first, you know, big issues was the Office for the Youth Foster Ombudsperson, and to grow government to make sure that kids in foster care had access to all of the resources that they needed, whether they had a caseworker with them, whether they had family with them or not. So if somebody wanted, you know, to, you know, just influence their living situations but didn't feel heard, you know, we have a watchdog that is for kids. And I grew government with Republicans. And so for the right reasons, I think that we can all do the right things. It's a matter of what kind of legacy do we want to leave behind? How do we want our kids and grandkids talking about us? Because this is a historic moment. Here we are in 2024 talking about what happened in 1978 in the last tie in the Minnesota House. And it didn't go well because people, there's a lot of reasons, right? A few of those folks are still with us, and we've had a chance to chat with some of them. But we have to be able to modernize our approach And for me, that looks like taking better care of future generations.
Yeah, exactly. And bravo about your first bill. That's amazing. And we know that foster care is big in Indian country here, especially in Minnesota, being way up there with our relatives being in foster care.
And it's a huge issue that we have to be careful about, because we've always been fighting this fight. We have to keep the fight up. So that part's important. And we have to continue to do better. But also now we're up against a federal government trifecta that is going to just continue all of the policies we've seen for hundreds of years. And if we don't think that we're not part of that history that's being made right now, I think we would need to wake up, right? Because right. It's really important to recognize that there were people in politics generations ago that fought, you know, when boarding schools were just opening and when they were beginning, there are people who fought then, there are people who fought during, the people who fought after, people who are still fighting today. We're going to have new policies like that in our immigrant communities of immigrants, in communities, the trans communities, in two-spirit communities, in, you know, folks that have not been attacked yet by this kind of majority, and making sure that we're standing up and remembering that none of us are truly free until we're all free, I think is going to be a big piece of it. So my politics this year is going to focus on how do we do the most good for the most people. Mm-hmm. We can't go back in time and change the election. This is our circumstance and what we're going to deal with. But I hope it also spurs us to think about what do we want to do next election. So I'm already planning that. I'll be working on the MVP project with the House this year, which is the Minnesota Values Project, talking to Minnesotans about what do they value and what do they want to see out of politics, and really starting to think about what is the next 50 years of our both economic and cultural growth look like? Who do we want to be in history, and how do we want to influence that? And it's largely a movement done by people under 50. You know, we haven't been greatly involved in politics. And so finding opportunities for us to get our voices in there, give us some way to talk about solutions rather than just finding spaces to complain in will be really important.
Well, we got a few more things to talk about, and we got to take a quick break here. But we're here with Minnesota State Representative Jessica Hansen, and I want to touch a little bit about what you guys have done to really safeguard a lot of our communities, too, in the last couple of years. But also talk a little bit about cannabis, because, as you know, I'm very interested in what's going on with the state and the BIPOC people and the protections there. So, hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and Haley, we'll be right back.
Stay with us.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Big news in Wisconsin this month, as much of the controversial anti-union Act 10 law was struck down in a ruling by Dane County Circuit Court Judge Jacob Frost. Two takeaways on this. One, the ruling gets at the heart of what has always made this law so brazenly political, by defining public safety employees differently from general public employees. That decision was pretty clearly made not based on across-the-board policy, but on which unions backed Scott Walker for governor in 2010. It would be fitting if that is what ultimately spells the end for this controversial law. Secondly, this case is headed to an appeal, which almost certainly will end up at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. While this case still might be decided by the court's current 4-3 liberal majority, it's a good reminder of just how important the upcoming race for state Supreme Court will be.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
How? Hey, welcome back, everyone. Here we are with Minnesota State Representative Jessica Hansen. And Jessica, before we get to talking a little bit about cannabis, this segment goes really quick. I'd like you to be able to talk about anything you want, because we'll probably have a good 3 to 4 minute conversation about that.
I think the biggest thing that I am talking about with folks is just the importance of being involved in politics. Like, there's so many people who are really upset right now about the outcomes of the election and feel like it doesn't represent the majority of our country. And that might be true, but our elections say otherwise. And we have to stand in that light and accept that for what it is, and then kind of live in the world as it is while we create the world that we want. And so right now, that means addressing the issues as they come up, working on what's realistic and pragmatic in front of us, and then planning for the future and thinking, what do you want to see out of politics? A lot of people don't get involved because they just think, you know, we've all heard it, like, politicians are all corrupt, politicians are all this, just a bunch of rich people. Like, that's not my experience. And I know I'm a bit of the anomaly in that, but I'm a single mom and one of the only single moms in the legislature. I only live on my legislative salary. I teach part-time at Metro State outside of that. And we don't make a ton of money. And so I don't think it, like, understanding that not everybody got into this work just to make money. And a lot of people actually don't have the privilege of making a lot of money while doing this work, that it's kind of double-sided. You know, we've got folks who drive in many hours, you know, whether it be from Moorhead or from Duluth area, or we have testifiers that are coming down from any of our tribal nations that share geography with us that drive a really long ways to engage in government and to be part of that solution. And so while I understand the stigma about politicians and what politics has become in a large, you know, kind of icky way, we also do have really great people in politics who are doing really great things and want to hear from you and want people to be involved. We are all a bunch of nerds. Absolutely. So, like, people think, like, we don't care about those issues, but, like, that's exactly what we do care about. We nerd out on public policy and finding solutions. So whether it's one person facing the issue and, like, the solution wouldn't cause harm, let's do that. Even if it does feel like I'm the only person in Minnesota going through this, you're probably not. And we can tell you at least what's going on with it and see if we can't help create some change. But we are here to help in a certain way. And I'm not saying that as we, the government, we as people who are sick of watching the government work the way it works, who went and got inside, we want to hear from you so that we can work alongside you and share our power with you.
Amen to that. And I know, Jessica, State Representative, that your door is open during session. People reach out to you during that. I've seen you a bunch of times when I've been up there wandering around. And you have an open door session with your constituents and people that believe in certain things. And I just say bravo to that.
Thank you for that. I mean, my cell phone number is something I've given to everybody. So it's there. People can call or text me anytime. That's the number that's on my legislative profile. My email address, I look at those. I see the messages that come in, especially when they're custom written messages and not form messages. You know, those always, I see those. Making sure that folks know, like, my address is on all my campaign materials. Like, that's questionable sometimes, I think, as a decision, but, you know, I have a great, great relationship with local PD and very loud pit bulls. So it helps. But it is, I try to be accessible, right? I'm a regular person. I'm a mom. Mm-hmm. I eat, you know, sparsely on a low salary. You know, I live paycheck to paycheck, and I talk about that because it's something like 3 out of 4 people live paycheck to paycheck. And this idea that we're supposed to, like, feel ashamed of it and not talk about that. I have 2 degrees. I'm working in the field that I'm educated in. You know, the reality is that public service isn't for the money. But for a lot of people who are working for the money, they're not getting it, and they're struggling to buy groceries, and we're struggling to buy these things. And I'm in that struggle right alongside so many people. And so I know what that's like. And so, when I'm advocating for my own experience as much as I am for so many other people. So trying to break some of those stigmas down. And I think my cannabis work kind of reflects a lot of that,
right?
You know, just talking about something that people were too afraid to talk about in the spotlight often. And I don't know, I just think if we're less fake and we stop the theater, there's so much political theater. I just think that the public will want to be involved in more and feel like they can be involved more. But if we just continue to act like it's a place for the elites, and we act like it's, you have to act a certain way, dress a certain way, be a certain way, think a certain way, that's not going to create the bigger tent. And I think that's what my party's doing, is we're creating a bigger tent to say, how can we be more, bring in more people into just civics? I ran the model legislature at the Capitol last couple weeks ago, and that was the most powerful thing I've ever seen. So If you haven't seen that Metro States model legislature right out of St. Paul, we ran it at the Capitol on December 5th and 6th. Their social media's got more about it, but bringing kids into this and so many other things.
Well, let's talk about, you know, you were ahead of the curve when we were talking about cannabis and medical and legalizing it. Let's talk a little bit about your journey and also where we're at today.
Yeah, so I got into cannabis legalization because I found that cannabis was very healing for me. I had quite a traumatic childhood, and so having complex PTSD was a hard thing to treat. You know, I tried all the pharmaceuticals, and I've been through tons of hours of therapy and group and individual and all the different things, while also being like a very high achieving, successful woman. And so that stigma of like, but look, you're so successful, and knowing I still didn't feel great about it, that's where cannabis kind of filled a gap for me. And that's, it's different for everybody. Some people are in pain. Some people can't sleep. Some people can't eat. Some people just like to enjoy it. You know, everybody has their own relationship with the plant, but for me, that's what it was, healing. And so it helped me find my voice in what I actually love to do, which is policy advocacy. And so we got involved and we just lobbied local government, got involved with our local party stuff, kind of worked our way up and began to just be seen, right? The world's run by people who show up. So we just kept showing up everywhere we could. From there, I helped my house rep get elected. And then eventually he, like after a year or so, he decided he wasn't going to seek another term. And I was kind of shocked. And I said, what are we going to do? And he said, I think you should run. And so that I ran for office. And so my advocacy predates my election. But then once I got elected, I started to work on all of that. Now we have legalized it. We've ended prohibition. August 1st, 2023, it no longer became a crime to consume a healing plant in a peaceful way. And we threw the big event at First Avenue to celebrate. You know, it was really magical for me to stand at First Avenue and see like the police kind of protecting the line, like the block that we had blocked off. And as everybody within the line was freely smoking. And, you know, I've heard from people who are like, I thought I would never see this in my lifetime. And like, that's why I got into this, was to just make sure people could consume in a safe and healing way. That's really today where we're at. It's really kind of transformed. I think like we have short memories, so we sometimes forget some of the things that happened in the past, but we expunged everybody's record. We are resentencing anybody with a felony conviction. We are allowing anybody that's got, you know, it used to say that you couldn't work in the cannabis industry if you had any crimes other than cannabis crimes, which I felt like that was prejudicial. And so we amended that before we passed the bill to make sure it was more broad to more people, but did also still keep us safe from white collar crime, human and labor trafficking, and other real like kind of kingpin style crimes. And so we drew that line and threaded that needle really well. So I think like we forgot about all that stuff that's happened. You can't lose your job anymore just for smoking weed on the weekends. Like, don't smoke weed at work, but like, you can't lose your job. Your kids are not going to get taken away simply because you consume cannabis in ways not around them. Like, you cannot expose children to it. That's still true. But like, you're not going to risk losing custody of your kids because you were out at a friend's house where there were no children consuming cannabis, right? When you're safe with it, it's good. So today we're kind of in this business side of things. So we're launching licensing. We're getting into that. So the few people that think that they have what it takes to run a cannabis business in Minnesota, those folks are stepping up to try to do that. And that's the licensing piece that most people are most interested in. So there's definitely great information on the OCM's website about that. There's a new timeline that's been rolled out. I think we're on track as far as like timing goes. And that's really exciting for me, like where we thought we would be. And that's where we are today. So we had some stuff that happened with the social equity pre-approval lottery, which I have a lot of feelings about that, which is probably a whole episode. Where we are now is still on track, and it is still a good situation. And we were able to remedy some of the problems that we had with like people who paid like their life savings to apply for this. And how can we get their money back and make sure that that got back to them? And the office made that decision to make sure that they could do that. So there's a lot going on, though.
Thank you so much for coming on. We got to get you on again. Native Roots Radio, we'll see you tomorrow.
And free Leonard Peltier now.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matinair on Air.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, political consultant Joe Sapecki joins us in another edition of This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings at 10.
Let's get back to live music in the lair with Kaylin Cole. The next song you have for us tonight is called 1103. Yes. Is that a time or a flight number?
Oh, that's actually really good. That's a good idea. I think I might have to write another song with that. You'll get 50%.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Pre-Christmas shopping turned terrifying in Killeen, Texas Saturday when a driver leading police on a high-speed chase plowed his pickup truck through the doors of a JCPenney and kept driving through the store. He was eventually shot and killed by a state trooper. ABC's Zareen Shah has more.
Four people were taken to the hospital. One took themselves to the ER. The injuries ranging from minor to severe. Now, there were some initial reports of a possible active shooter, but officials stress that was not the case. Only the suspect was shot.
Law enforcement on alert for vehicle attacks on holiday events after Friday's incident at a market in Magdeburg, Germany, that killed five people. Suspects in custody. Authorities say he's a 50-year-old man originally from Saudi Arabia with Islamophobic views. Two Navy pilots ejected safely from their F-A-18 fighter plane. It was hit over the Red Sea in what the Navy called a friendly fire incident. One suffered minor injuries. Today's expected to be one of the busiest travel days of the year. This is ABC News.